I've pressed the button.
I've pressed the button too. Just get one of those in there to start off the new season.
Hello and welcome back to a podcast about murder. I'm Jem and I'm here with Freya, returning to the podcast after a fairly long hiatus.
I actually had to blow dust off my mic. That's how long it's been.
That's a really cinematographic image of just like the archives. I couldn't remember where the programs were to record this.
Oh my god.
I was like, oh god, where are the things? But now it should all be working. It should be fine. So today we're going to be discussing a case that's more of a mystery than a murder. Every now and then I like to do these sorts of cases. So we did the Isdal woman last season, or the Reykjavik confessions on season 3. And I enjoy doing them because we sort of end up discussing some interesting theories on what might have happened. And murder is just one of many possible ways of making sense of unusual events and circumstances.
Right.
So in this episode, we're going to discuss the disappearance of the Eileen Moore lighthouse keepers. Be aware going into this case that a lot of the information available is shrouded in speculation and myth, so I will point out when anything is uncertain. And other than that, no warnings in particular for this episode.
Cool.
On December 26th, 1900, the SS Hesperus arrived at Eileen Moore to drop off provisions for its lighthouse keepers. It was immediately clear that something was wrong. After several attempts to signal the keepers with the ship's horn and flares, the captain decided to send out a small boat of crewmen to investigate, including relief lighthouse keeper Joseph Moore. As the group arrived at the lighthouse, they were observed by 3 large black birds. Both the gate and the door were closed, but unlocked. All of the clocks had stopped working. An uneaten meal was set out on the table, and a chair was toppled over. There was no trace of the missing lighthouse keepers, and they have never been found since. This is the account of the discovery of the Flannan Isles lighthouse that is the most frequently perpetuated. However, many of the details have been exaggerated or embellished over time to make for a better story. The detail of the uneaten meal and the fallen chair, for instance, are considered to be made up. As we retrace the days leading up to the discovery of the abandoned lighthouse, we're going to try and separate fact from fiction, although that's not always easy with cases as old as these that have so readily captured the public's imagination. That being said, let's get into the background of this mystery.
I'm intrigued.
That's good. At least one person is hooked. The Flannan Isles are a group of incredibly remote islands in Scotland. The islands are named after St. Flannan, and a chapel is built in his honour on the largest of the 7 islands, Eileen Moore. Due to its size and location, Eileen Moore was also chosen as the site for the construction of the Flannan Isles Lighthouse, which was built between 1895 and 1899 by the Northern Lighthouse Board. The lighthouse was first lit on December 7th, 1899, and almost exactly 1 year later, its keepers would disappear forever.
So weird.
It is weird. Like, I hadn't actually made the connection until I was writing it out, that they start their sort of shift at the lighthouse on December 7th, a year later. Eileen Moore has a mystical and supernatural reputation, as locals reportedly refer to it as, quote-unquote, the other country, believing that the barrier between our world and another dimension, such as the fairy realm, is particularly thin there. Local legends talk of spirits haunting the islands and mystical sea creatures occupying the surrounding waters, deterring anyone from setting up a permanent residence there, although local shepherds have often taken their herds out there to graze. These local legends and rumours obviously sparked many theories as to what had actually happened to the lighthouse keepers, which we'll get into a little later. The lighthouse was typically manned by 3 people, a permanent lighthouse keeper and 2 assistant lighthouse keepers. There was typically at least 1 other person employed as a relief lighthouse keeper in case one of the 3 was unable to work. On December 7th, 1900, 3 men began their shift at the Eileen Moore Lighthouse. James Duckett, permanent lighthouse keeper. He was a seasoned lighthouse keeper and had at least 22 years of experience working for the Northern Lighthouse Board under his belt. Thomas Marshall, second assistant lighthouse keeper. Also an experienced seafarer, he had worked for 4 years as a lighthouse keeper prior to his time on Eileen Moore. The first assistant lighthouse keeper should have been William Ross. However, due to injury and illness, he had been unable to join the crew. His spot was filled by Donald MacArthur, occasional lighthouse keeper.
Donald MacArthur, occasional lighthouse keeper. That's such a good thing.
But they also, in the documents at the time, they just referred to him as the occasional.
Love that.
So Donald was an experienced seafarer, although he hadn't been working for the Northern Lighthouse Board for very long, so he may not have been as experienced as the other two in manning a lighthouse. He was well respected by the local community, although was known for his volatile temper and propensity for brawls. So keep that in mind.
Occasional lighthouse keeper, brawler. What's not to love about this guy?
Exactly. Gamekeeper Roderick McKenzie was employed by the Northern Lighthouse Board to observe the lighthouse from the mainland, looking for any signals from the crew that something was amiss. He had last seen the light on December 7th, but didn't report anything to the board, mainly because he simply put this down to poor weather conditions, such as storms and fog, which wasn't unusual or remarkable for this time of year. It's also important to note that he was employed to watch for signals from the lighthouse, rather than an absence of activity, and as such checked the lighthouse during the daytime. So it's not too weird that he didn't see the light or report it.
Right.
Because I think people will often say, well, you know, there's a substantial, like there are several days where the light isn't seen. How come this wasn't reported? And it's kind of, I think that helps to make sense of it, that he's watching it during the day primarily. So you wouldn't necessarily notice something was wrong.
Yeah.
And also, he's supposed to be watching if they're saying, they're like supposed to signal him rather than him sort of interpreting anything.
Sure.
On December 15th, 1900, a cargo ship known as the SS Arctur was making its way from Philadelphia, USA to Leith, Scotland. They had suffered bad weather conditions for most of their journey across the Atlantic, and the night of December 15th was no exception. As they neared the coast of Scotland, they should have been able to rely on the light from Eileen Moore to guide them along the coastline through the heavy fog. However, no such light was seen. At around midnight, the Arctur passed approximately 5 miles north of the lighthouse, still in complete darkness. Something was definitely wrong. The captain of the Arctur, Captain Holman, was unable to immediately report the incident, as the ship's arrival in Leith was further delayed. The ship was advancing more slowly than usual, as it had been damaged during its travels. Captain Holman reported the absence of the light on the Flannan Isles on December 18th, but it wouldn't be until December 26th that people realised quite how serious the issue was. As discussed at the beginning of this episode, the keeper's disappearance was discovered by crew members of the SS Hesperus as they came to restock provisions on the island. The SS Hesperus was supposed to arrive on December 20th to provide the team with supplies. Due to the weather conditions, however, they did not make it to the island until the 26th. Normally, the lighthouse keepers would have raised a flag to acknowledge the ship's arrival and left provision boxes on the shore to be restocked. There was no sight of the flag, provision boxes, or of the lighthouse keepers themselves. As I've already said, Joseph Moore and a couple fellow crew members went to investigate. The keepers were nowhere to be found. Moore and three others were left on the island to man the lighthouse. That evening, the captain of the Hesperus, Captain Harvey, sent the following telegram to the Northern Lighthouse Board to report the incident. A dreadful accident has happened at Flannan's. The three keepers, Duckett, Marshall, and the occasional, have disappeared from the island. On our arrival there this afternoon, no sign of life was to be seen on the island. Fired a rocket, but as no response was made, managed to land Moore, who went up to the station but found no keepers there. The clocks were stopped, and other signs indicated that the accident must have happened about a week ago. Poor fellows, they must have been blown over the cliffs or drowned trying to secure a crane or something like that. Night coming on. We could not wait to make something as to their fate. I have left Moore, MacDonald, Boymaster, and two seamen on the island to keep the light burning until you make other arrangements. We'll not return to Oban until I hear from you. I have repeated this wire to Muirhead in case you are not at home. I will remain at the telegraph office tonight until it closes if you wish to wire me. Robert Muirhead was the superintendent of the Northern Lighthouse Board and was in charge of leading the investigation into the keeper's disappearance. He arrived on the Flannan Isles on December 29th and submitted a detailed report to the NLB on January 8th, 1901. He spoke with the crew members who had been left on the island, as they had been searching for clues as to what may have happened. Together, they were able to establish a timeline. The last entry in the lighthouse logbook had been made on December 15th, so this had to be the day of the incident. Muirhead noted that the forenoon maintenance tasks for the day had been completed. Likewise, the kitchen showed signs of having been cleaned up after lunch. Corroborated by the Arctur's account of not seeing the light that evening, Muirhead determined that the keepers had to have disappeared during the afternoon or evening of December 15th.
Okay.
Upon investigation of the island, Muirhead noted that the equipment on the east landing place was in order. However, the west landing place was in quite a state. Ropes were strewn across the rocks. The iron railings around the crane platform had been bent and twisted out of shape. The lifebuoy was missing. Although Muirhead was able to determine that it had not been removed intentionally. Do you say boy or buoy?
My whole life I assumed it was boy.
I was told it was boy.
I swear my parents would say boy.
Yes, but no one else I know says boy.
I know, it's like we changed universes.
Like, this right. is the thing, it's the, what's the other thing that we have in common with the misspelling?
Gautier.
Gautier.
No, you know what, I feel like we might have told this story already.
Do you think so? On the podcast?
I actually really... might have, but I'm going to go for it anyway.
Because it's that fascinating.
When we were meeting up in Copenhagen, I went through customs and I saw a signpost that was talking about Jean-Paul Gaultier fragrances. And I noticed that there was an L slap bang in the middle of Gaultier, which had never been there before. You have to just trust me on this. In my universe, it was Gautier. There was no doubt about it. I'd seen the word many times, the name. I'd noticed it. And then suddenly, it was Gaultier. What happened?
You crossed over.
Yeah.
That was what the flight literally went through, like a time and space warp.
It is the only explanation.
So, should I go with boy or buoy?
Well, I guess if we now live in the Gaultier and buoy universe...
That's true.
We have to just accept it. But that's we true. Used to live in the boy. Gaultier and boy universe.
And that's just
simple
that.
As that. That's yeah. just how it is.
I'm going to start the whole sentence again. Ropes were strewn across the rocks. The iron railings around the crane platform had been bent and twisted out of shape. The life buoy was missing, although Muirhead was able to determine that it had not been removed intentionally, but that it had been torn from the ropes in the storm. After an inventory of the possessions found in the lighthouse, Muirhead was able to determine that Duckett had been wearing his sea boots and a waterproof jacket at the time of his disappearance. Similarly, Marshall had been wearing his sea boots and oilskin. MacArthur's oilskin, however, had been left behind. This is an odd detail that is often picked up on by people who are interested in the case. Why would MacArthur have left behind his coat in such terrible weather conditions?
Right.
The most heavily disputed piece of evidence is the alleged discovery of strange logbook entries made by Thomas Marshall. These logbook entries are as follows. December 12th, gale, north by northeast, sea lashed to fury, stormbound 9 p.m., never seen such a storm, everything shipshape, Duckett irritable. 12 p.m., storm still raging, wind steady, stormbound, cannot go out, ship passed sounding foghorn, could see lights of cabins. Duckett quiet, MacArthur crying.
Oh, ominous.
Very ominous. December 13th. Storm continued through night. Wind shifted west by north. Duckett quiet, MacArthur praying. 12 noon. Grey daylight. Me, Duckett, and MacArthur prayed. December 15th, 1 p.m. Storm ended. Sea calm. God is over all.
Creepy.
Yeah. So many people have latched on to the odd details of these logbook entries. First of all, the descriptions of the bad weather don't match up with reports from the mainland, as the storms had been observed several days after the 12th. Secondly, MacArthur had a lot of experience working in similar conditions on boats and was known for having a tough, violent character. What could have caused him to break down crying?
Right.
Thirdly, why would they be praying, as they would have known that they would be perfectly sheltered from the storm within the lighthouse?
Right.
So based on what we've discussed so far, and before we get into the theories, do you have any thoughts on as to what may have happened, just initially?
I mean, there doesn't seem to be much evidence that they're tangling with any other person.
That's a good thing to have picked up on, because that will come up later on.
But there seems to be all of this damage to the to stuff around. But you're saying that there was no, that the weather doesn't match up.
Well, there were storms, because that's sort of the reason why Mackenzie couldn't see the lighthouse from the mainland.
Okay.
The point about the logbook entries is that they would put the storms, they are sort of suggesting that the storms happened a bit earlier than the storms actually happened, and that they would have experienced an incredibly violent storm that was not witnessed from the mainland.
Right.
Is sort of the key issue there.
So, well, the thing that actually popped into my head first was like a shared psychosis from some kind of toxin, like mold or asbestos or something like that. I don't know if asbestos causes that.
I don't know. But I like that theory that there's something that's causing them to like...
Because of the praying and the freaking out and the crying that's out of character.
Yeah. So I will say, before we get into the theories, that while the logbook entries do add a further layer of intrigue and mystery to the events surrounding the disappearance, they are heavily disputed and many people now consider them to be a fictional addition to the story. So that's something to bear in mind. But I was interested to see what you sort of made of them before I told you they were essentially, like, bullshit. So... In his report to the Northern Lighthouse Board, Muirhead provided his own theory as to what had happened to the keepers. Quote, I am of the opinion that the most likely explanation of this disappearance of the men is that they had all gone down on the afternoon of Saturday, 15th December, to the proximity of the West Landing to secure the box with the mooring ropes, etc., and that an unexpectedly large roller had come up on the island, and a large body of water going up higher than where they were and coming down upon them had swept them away with resistless force. This is the most generally accepted theory, that the keepers wanted to secure the equipment and were swept out to sea by a massive wave. Apparently, they had been fined in the past for losing or damaging equipment, so they would have been anxious to make sure that none of the equipment was lost in the storm.
Okay.
So in this theory, Duckett and Marshall would have gone out to secure the gear on the West Landing, and MacArthur may have seen the severity of the storm from the lighthouse and rushed out to warn them, only to be swept away himself. And this urgency would explain why he didn't take his oilskin with him.
Right.
Having said that, people who sort of dispute this theory then say, well, if he rushed out after them, why did he take the time to close the door and the gate? Because remember, they were found closed when the Hesperus arrived.
Yeah, that is pretty strange.
I do find that strange. I don't know if it would be impossible for them to just be slammed shut.
What, with wind or something?
Yeah. So I don't find that necessarily a huge flaw.
No, not if they could be moved by another force. Then.
But
yeah.
I don't know how heavy the door is. If it's like impossible that wind could have closed it, then...
Yeah, or if there's, some kind of latch or something.
Yeah. The second theory is that a fight broke out between the men that ended in murder. You'll recall that MacArthur had a reputation for being a brawler and was the least experienced of the three in working in a lighthouse. Doing a very demanding job on a secluded island in terrible weather conditions, living in close quarters with two other people sounds like quite a stressful situation for even the most level-headed person, and it's possible that the job conditions were taking their toll on MacArthur, who snapped, and a fight could have broken out.
Yeah.
There are obviously several variations on this theory. Mm-hmm. So they got into a fight. They ended up outside and accidentally slipped on the rocks and drowned in the sea.
Right.
MacArthur killed one or both of the others and disposed of their bodies in the sea, either then taking his own life or fleeing in a rowboat.
Right.
Or MacArthur started the fight and was killed in self-defense by the others, who then got rid of his body and left the island together.
Okay.
What do you make of this?
It's not impossible for any of those things to happen. I feel like there would be more evidence of a violent encounter.
I think so too.
And also, you'd feel like, especially if it was the two guys, you'd feel like they'd show up somewhere.
I think they've got several years of experience that prove that they're sort of reliable. And I think they could legitimately just say to whoever's in charge, this guy had a breakdown and attacked us.
Right.
And we acted in self-defense. I don't see why they would have both fled without a trace.
Sure.
Leaving behind their families. I don't know. I think it's possible. I think there's not enough evidence that really points in this direction, other than the fact that he has a violent past.
Yeah. And I guess it's also kind of hard to believe the first one where they all go out and fight and then slip on the rocks and drown.
Yeah.
I think that is sort of like
I think they'd have to go so far out. Like, I think it's quite a distance as well from the lighthouse. And
yeah,
I don't see it happening myself.
Do we know about the current, like, this is so specific. Do you know about the current, like, around the lighthouse? Like, would their bodies have been sort of dragged out, never to be seen again? Or is it unusual that their bodies didn't wash up somewhere?
I would imagine the current is quite strong because they don't seem to be too concerned with the fact that they haven't found the bodies.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I was thinking.
But that is a key point for me. Like, I don't understand where they could have gone. Because surely, you know, it seems there's quite a few small islands around here.
Mm.
I feel like they should have washed up somewhere. But I don't know much about the sea. So the third theory is similar to the second and quite similar to what you were saying earlier, in that the harsh and isolated conditions led to the keepers going mad and potentially deciding to leave the island. I'm not sure how believable I find this, because they're all quite experienced at working in these conditions, especially Duckett and Marshall. So I don't understand why they wouldn't have returned to their families or even let them know they were alive.
Yeah, well, that's why I added the toxin kind of theory.
Well, that's the thing. I think unless you really believe, and it's possible that you believe that something is, like, after you, you wouldn't necessarily take the time to go to, like, let anyone know. The fourth theory involves outsiders coming to the island. Possibly criminals or spies who had landed on Eileen Moore and needed to cover their tracks by killing the keepers so that the authorities wouldn't be alerted to their presence in the area. I think, as you were saying, there's not much to prove that there's an outside presence, but I don't think there's anything that can disprove it either.
No, that's true.
And a variation on this theme is that the keepers themselves were involved in criminal or spy activity. And that's why, that, you know, the lighthouse was sort of a key point for passing information, and that they would have left the island with their accomplices. So our final theories involve the supernatural and paranormal.
Nice.
So the Flannan Isles have a mystical reputation, and based on this, people think that the keepers may have crossed over into the fairy realm. Or possibly, go ahead.
Oh, I was just thinking, yeah, with that sort of like the paranormal version of the toxin thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like they're just being like tempted into the fairyland by something, and they're praying and crying and acting really weird. And then they go. I like it.
Yeah, I like it. I like the idea that it's sort of, I mean, also if that's the case, you know, it's not the worst thing that could have happened to them.
That is a very bizarre thing to say. Because, I mean, they disappeared from Earth.
That's true. That's true.
And their lives are over.
Well, their lives in this realm. In this dimension.
True, they could have become kings in the fairy
land. It could be like a Narnia situation. They were like the chosen ones. And Aslan needs them.
That is definitely possible.
So, the other theory is that they had been attacked by a sea monster or a giant sea bird.
Love it.
Again, like, very dramatic. I'm on board with it.
A giant sea bird really fills me with, like, intrigue. Because I've never heard that as, like,
me neither.
Thing. You know, like, obviously a sea monster is a thing. But, like, we're all familiar with that concept. But I'm not familiar with the concept of, like, a mysterious giant bird that we don't know about. It's like the opposite of a coelacanth, like just this unknown, or like Loch Ness monster.
So another theory is that they had been transformed into the three large birds that watched as the members of the Hesperus arrived on the island.
I love it. That's the best one.
That's great.
Easily. Ditch all the other theories. I'm so into this.
I have so many questions about this theory. How? Why? Why are they still there? Why didn't
I think why is the big one.
Like,
why are they still there? Yeah, I love that. Yes.
But I just love it. They were transformed into birds. That's all you need to know.
And they're just there watching.
Yeah. Again, why?
Well, why not?
Yeah. And I think that's a fair argument. I'm trying to think of how this could be linked to the giant seabird theory. Is the giant seabird like protector of all birds? And now they're like his brethren.
Maybe the giant seabird, yeah, transformed them.
Yeah.
Is the giant magical seabird came and made them into
birds.
This is the furthest thing from murder that we've ever talked about on the podcast, I think.
30 minutes in and we're like, so yeah, giant seabird transformed a human into a bird.
Three humans. And then they just watched as the scene was investigated.
Oh god. Another theory is that they boarded a ghost ship and were condemned to serve as part of a ghost crew for the rest of their lives.
Love that too. Definitely a good one.
I think this one, you know, seems very typical of the time as well. Like, there are sort of these incidents like the Mary Celeste at the same time where people do just see ghost ships and assume that, you know, that's the thing that can happen, I guess.
What is it with people? Like, nobody wants to accept that they could have imagined something. That is just such, it's such a running thing where people see something, so with shapes or like shadows or something, and they're just like, there's no possible way that my brain, which is designed to pick up patterns, could have misled me in any way. I definitely saw something that doesn't exist.
Other people even theorize that the keepers may have somehow crossed over into another dimension, which is presumably explained by the stopped clocks.
Right, yeah. I was wondering when the clocks were going to come back into it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously, I can't see a giant seabird turning off all the clocks or stopping all the clocks and then transforming them into birds.
Well, yeah, but the force of, like, the magical transformation could have messed with the clocks.
I didn't think of that.
Yeah, well, get on my level.
Can a storm?
I don't know. I don't know enough
that?
About clocks.
Maybe like magnetism, you know, like storms can be magnetic storms.
I assume so. But I really don't know about clocks in the early 20th century to be having this conversation. The final theory is, of course, that aliens came to Eileen Moore and abducted the keepers.
I was a bit surprised that hadn't come up yet.
Oh, saving the best for last. What do you make of any of this theory or any of the theories we've discussed so far?
Okay, I think here's my fun brain loves turned into crows or turned into blackbirds and magical things. And obviously I like aliens, but I don't think it explains the disarray. Well, because I think aliens...
Yeah, that's true.
They're quite precise. What was I going to say? But my real life brain likes some kind of accident, some kind of, we have to leave now, it's a terrible... Like, there was a terrible storm that freaked them all out. But, I mean, it doesn't make sense with the experience that these guys had. But maybe there was a terrible, very localized storm that nobody could see or know about, and it just freaked them out. And maybe that's in conjunction with the sort of shared psychosis of... Which is either caused by something biological that I said earlier, or it's like just from the isolation... You know, because it doesn't matter how many times you do this. Sometime you could just snap and go nuts.
That's true.
So maybe even just despite the fact that they had all this experience being isolated and working in lighthouses, that doesn't necessarily mean that they couldn't one day have enough. And just their brains just kind of goes like, fuck this. I'm out. I'm taking your sanity with me. I'm out of here. And then they just kind of all go nuts.
And have to leave.
In some way. It could just be an accident. But I do think the murder... There is a possibility that someone murdered two of them.
Or two of them murdered one. And were in it together.
I think either of those things are likely. I think some murder and then running away would also sort of explain what was left behind.
But I was going to say, oh, they made a film sort of inspired by this case. I haven't seen it, but I read the synopsis. I think it's got someone like Gerard Butler in it. I'm not sure. And from what I remember reading, the plot of that is that basically some like gold washes up on the island. And they're like, oh, what are we going to do with this gold? Like, do we keep it for ourselves? What are we going to do? And it sort of drives them mad. And they end up turning on each other for the gold. And then right. One of them leaves the island with
I like that.
The gold.
I mean, I don't know how likely it is that just some gold would wash up. But it's possible. Why not? Or like some jewels or...
Well, I think there's some... I'm not sure. I think there's some explanation in the film. Like there is...
Or what about... Okay, I don't know who's familiar with Bob's Burgers. But what about ambergris?
Oh. I love how you said that like Bob's Burgers invented ambergris.
No, but there's that one episode where they find some ambergris. Yeah. And it's like they know it's like they find out that it's worth loads of money. And I feel like back in the day... You know, that was definitely a big thing because of the, they would use it for oil, right? Or stuff like that.
I think you can use it for like, you can use it for oil.
You can eat it as well.
You can use it for like perfume, maybe? Is that what ambergris is used for?
I think
for,
so. For like cosmetics? It's various things, but it's like, it was very valuable and they found like a big nugget. What if, like, it seems more likely from the ocean that maybe like a big nugget of ambergris washed up and drove them mad. Because it could have been worth thousands.
Why not just keep it and then split it when you get back to the... Or do you think there was some kind of like, no, it's my ambergris. I'm not sharing it with you two guys.
Well, you know what people are like.
Yeah. So which of these theories, I think we've discussed it at length, the most plausible for you would be that they...
I think an accident and a murder. An accident trying to leave the island and murder... where one person escapes or potentially two people escape, is those are equally likely.
And what do you think is the most interesting theory?
Turn into crows.
You really love that crow transformation.
I think it's so cool because I hadn't thought about it. And then I was like, the three crows watching. That just works so well. It's like a perfect, like it's like an Edgar Allan Poe story. I mean, you can't go wrong with aliens or walking off into the fairy realm. I think... The interesting thing about fairy stuff is always fairy-related things in these areas at that time was really a way to explain things that happened that were upsetting or that couldn't at the time be explained any other way.
Mm.
So like changelings.
Yeah.
I think that came about from the fact that sometimes people have babies that cry a lot and are like and the mum or dad becomes, you know, depressed or anxious by the struggling with the new baby, and that was how people sort of explained the horrors of when people could commit infanticide and things like that. And then they would say no, it wasn't really a baby, it wasn't really a human baby.
And that's still a huge trope in like horror films,
right? Yeah.
Like nowadays.
So I think that explanation is there to sort of explain what can't be explained, which is sometimes people do weird things and sometimes people just disappear and sometimes there are accidents, but it's those things happen.
Mm.
And then they become fairy stories.
Do you have any other theories as to what might have happened?
Maybe a storm hit and they were all like, hang on a second, fuck this. They were experienced guys, but they've been doing this a long time. They've got this new guy who's really pissing them off because he doesn't know what he's talking about and he's a violent prick. So he's just like being an arsehole to them. And then they just go.
So whatever happened, we can't really know for sure as the bodies of the keepers were never found.
But what do you think?
I can sort of see the most likely theory as being Muirhead's conclusion. Two of them out there, you know, the storm's coming. Oh, we got to hurry and like get all the stuff like tied down. And they don't realize how fast the storm is coming.
Mm.
And then they're just hit and swept up in the wave. But there is just something about it that's a bit off somehow. And maybe it's just that sometimes things don't always add up. Well, thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode, although it is quite a departure from how we normally...
Also, I feel like there's so much faff.
There's so much, like,
we're out of practice.
This is, so. Yeah, we're out of practice. It's a weird case. We've just, like, literally, there was about 5 whole minutes where we were talking about Gaultier.
I'm going to have to try and make it more of a narrative out of this.
Don't forget to subscribe to this channel on whatever platform you listen to these. We're also on social media if you'd like to connect with us there. We'd love to hear from you. On Twitter at About Murder, on Instagram at A Podcast About Murder, on Facebook, A Podcast About Murder with no E. And you can always send us an email at apodcastaboutmurder@outlook.com. What case are we doing next?
Next week is...
You can, like, hint to it. Maybe that's a fun new thing we can do.
Next week is a cannibal. I mean, it's what I can guarantee is it's definitely a murder.
The bar was set pretty low for the premiere.
I enjoyed it. I like these mystery ones. Every now and again, it's definitely good to break out a good mystery with some potential paranormal ideas.
I like the mystery ones. I like starting a season with them because it's kind of like it eases us back into it. Although I can imagine for some people, hopefully you're not too frustrated if you've been waiting for the podcast to return and this is the episode that you get.
There's more, don't worry. And we're going to do a big serial killer this season, which yep. I'm sure plenty of people will know and be interested in. And it's also another mystery, but definitely murder that yep. you're doing. So yep. should be good. I think this will turn out good.
This is insane. This is honestly the messiest recording
I was thinking that, but then I think there's probably been worse ones that have turned out good, so we'll see.
Well, good luck to you.